Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
You're listening to the FT Money Show, brought to you by Investors Chronicle and FT Money.
Hello and welcome to the FT Money Show. In this week's programme, can you insure yourself against falling house prices? Is it time to get out of commercial property? What type of pension plan is best value, a full SIP or a low-cost SIP? And we have some good news and bad news on savings. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with the help of my colleagues from FT Money, Charlene Goff.
Hello.
Dan Thomas.
Hello.
And from Investors Chronicle, we're joined again by John McLeod.
Hiya.
Hello to you all. So let's start then with the money news and rumours this week that UK mortgage lenders may be considering insurance schemes to protect against falling house prices, especially as next year is predicted to be a difficult year in the housing market. Charlene, this is something that you've been looking into this week. What have you discovered?
Well, there's a growing interest from private investors to short residential property, so to bet now on prices going down. And this is only really starting to happen. We've seen years of very strong growth. There just hasn't been the demand for people wanting to profit from a downturn. But we're seeing this emerge now. And at the same time, we've heard that a couple of retail lenders are actually looking to bring this kind of opportunity to your average homeowner through their high street branches.
Shorting, of course, means that you make money when the price of something falls. I suppose in some ways, if you used some sort of shorting mechanism, a derivative or something like that, you could make almost as much money as your property falls in value. Is that the idea?
That is exactly the idea, yeah. I mean, you do get property speculators as well coming in who believe that house prices will fall and want to try and make money from that. But really, these are aimed at people often with quite large property portfolios who are getting increasingly nervous with all these gloomy house price forecasts we're seeing come out and are very keen to find a way to protect themselves. It's often especially those kind of homeowners that might want to sell in a year or two. And, you know, they don't want to risk losing the growth on their property.
Of course, it's already possible to short house prices in some ways, isn't it? Well, what sort of thing can you do at the moment?
You can spread bet on house prices. Spreadfair is a spread betting exchange that allows this and enables bettors to link up with other bettors rather than the actual company. So if you want to bet that prices are going down, you have to find someone else out there who thinks they're going to go up. So you can get in that way, and IG Index do something quite similar. We're also seeing a number of more complicated sort of funds and investment structures being launched by some of the commercial banks and niche fund managers that are going to allow this kind of thing, but they're really going to tie up your money for at least a year, maybe 2 years, and you really have to see property prices come down a long way before you start making money, so it is pretty high risk.
I suppose that is the problem, especially if you try to do it yourself with spread betting, because if prices don't fall as much as the spread betting prices suggest, you could lose money, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. There's always a starting point, and at the moment, I think the forecast for next year is prices coming down about 7%. So in some of these products, you have to see prices come down more than 7% before you even start making money. And if they come down 5 or 6, which is pretty bad news for some people, you would still lose the money that you bet there.
So you'd lose out on your spread bet, and you'd see the price of your property falls, so it could be a double whammy. I mean, John, this is almost the reverse of some of the investment products that existed to capture the upside in in property in recent years, isn't it?
That's right, Matthew. Going back to around about 2002, 2003, there were structured products which offered upside on the housing market, but with 100% capital protection. And I think there was one, I think from Newcastle, that allowed you to kind of go each way on the market. But those are sort of, I think it's been so much uncertainty or direction that those have sort of stopped. There were also covered warrants, which are a bit like spread betting, but you have protection if the market doesn't go the way you want. Last time I looked, there were none on housing, but
I had a look this week, in fact, and that covered warrant seems to have disappeared.
It has, but they can issue them quite quickly. So if demand picks up for ones that are short at the market, then I expect we will see them coming out.
And a lot of fund managers and property commentators are saying that they really expect some kind of explosion in this market in the first half of next year. Apparently, there's a lot of people talking about it and a lot of new funds being considered. So we could see big growth here.
The market is very well established in commercial property, particularly where institutions, not so much retail investors, but institutions have been using derivatives to bet with and against the IPD index for several years. And it's a huge market now. So if retail investors can tap into that sounds like a good idea.
It sounds like it could be a very valuable tool for 2008 when property prices, I think they're forecast to fall by about 7%, aren't they?
Yeah.
Lots of people. Well, we'll look out for the launch of these products next year, and also look out for Charlene's article on this very subject in the weekend FT on the 1st of December and on the website at ft.com/money. Remember, you can also send in your financial questions for us to answer by emailing us at ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. Still to come in the programme, self-invested personal pensions, or SIPs. Is a full one better than a low-cost one? Well, you'd think a full one would be the thing to go with. We'll find out shortly. And we have some good news and bad news on savings accounts and what you can spend the interest on. But first, commercial property. Now, being trapped in an office building, unable to get out with everything collapsing around you, is the stuff of nightmares, or at least a sort of cheesy movie. But that's exactly what has happened to some big property investors, metaphorically, if not literally. They've been trying to exit their investments as commercial property funds have seen their valuations tumbling, only to find the doors locked so they can't get their money out. So some people have been worrying that the same thing could happen to private investors in commercial property funds. Now, Dan, you've been looking at this subject for a couple of weeks now. What's the situation?
Well, I was talking to Patrick Sumner at Henderson Global Investors today. He's been around for more than two or three cycles now and has seen the ups and downs. And he is actually very worried about the liquidity within these open-ended trusts. These are the ones that are open to retail investors that people have been piling money in for the last 3 or 4 years. Under advisement from all the big professionals, and have seen some stellar returns. But now the values are turning, and with it, people are getting concerned and scared. And the fact is that people might be taking their money out, which, again, has consequences, as he goes on to say.
Well, that's here. What he said to you earlier on.
As far as the concrete evidence is concerned, we've had 2 months, September and October, of negative total returns from the IPD monthly index, which is a very fair reflection of what's going on in commercial property markets. Those negative returns are purely as a result of yields moving upwards as the market adjusts. What's happening in the investment market and what is happening in the tenant market are two rather different things. We've still got rental value growth, so rents are rising according to the latest evidence in all sectors, although not very strongly. But investors are putting less money into the sector, and this is pushing total returns down. Now, if you dig into the investment market, you're finding that there is a bigger differentiation between prime and secondary assets than there has been in previous years, when people with money that didn't cost them very much were buying almost everything, and there wasn't enough of a yield premium over secondary property. Now, the secondary property is what's moving out and pushing the average out, whereas prime property is holding relatively steady, although values are falling to a limited extent there as well.
And so on a practical basis, the people who might have money in one of the many commercial property funds out there who might be concerned about the performance, I mean, is it right that they're losing money at the moment, or what's happening out there in terms of the cash that people have?
Well, there are different types of commercial property funds. The open-ended property funds are seeing redemptions because, in theory, people can take their money out and the managers have to pay them out. If the managers have to sell properties in order to pay them out because they're not holding enough cash or cash equivalents, then there is a problem because the market is not terribly liquid at the moment. And the managers are in many cases sort of pushing up the redemption barriers or at least the spread between buy and sell in order to deter people or at least give themselves time. Now, that has a kind of vicious circle effect on the market. Forced sales are never good for any market, and they're certainly not good for confidence. But in closed-end funds, I think people are seeing a slightly different experience. Share prices are going down, but the underlying net asset values are not necessarily moving that fast.
Right, yeah. So as an investor in a commercial property fund, what would you recommend at the moment? I mean, there's plenty of people out there who bought into the bull run for the last few years and now are wondering maybe what they should do with their savings.
Well, it depends when they bought in. How bad they feel depends on when they bought in, because although looking at the shares, the UK property share market, it's down sort of 40-odd percent this year, it was up 50-odd percent last year. So if they bought in 3 years ago, they're still sitting on some pretty handsome gains. However, you know, they need to take a long-term view of what's happening here. As I said before, there are two different factors. There's the stock market and the investment market, and then there's the underlying tenant demand. And you have to sort of base your view on whether you think we are entering a recession and therefore a serious markdown in pricing, or whether this is a financial market problem that will have a limited, but only a limited effect, on the underlying commercial property market. And if you take that view, then this is a storm that you need to ride out. It's not going to sort of sweep the house away, but you will need to sort of batten down the hatches, put shutters on the windows, no need to leave town.
So, Dan, Patrick Sumner making the point that a lot of the holdings in these funds are illiquid. In other words, very difficult to sell them, very difficult to get your money out if you want to. Which UK funds are potentially affected by this?
Well, potentially all of them, really. I mean, there's more than 30 property unit trusts in the UK, some bigger than others, some with more institutional investors than others. The ones that I think people are most concerned about are the ones that actually benefited the most over the last 3 or 4 years. Specifically, it's the likes of Norwich Union and their large property unit trust, which is about 3.5 billion, was 4 billion a few months ago, now 3.5 billion, slightly telling that. Newstar, again, had a huge success story. And again, and across the fund management groups, Scottish Widows, Threadneedle, these are all guys with big funds, a lot of investors in there, and now facing a lot of redemptions. I think for the most part, flows are not. Well, investors aren't stampeding out of them, which is the crucial thing. And I've been speaking to quite a few fund managers this week, have been advising. Well, as they would do, they've been advising investors not to panic. The worst thing that that investors can do, they say, is panic, because in 1, 2, 3 years' time, investment in property will come good again, and you'll have to see returns again, and your returns will be secure in 5, 6, 7% again. If you leave now, you crystallise your losses, arguably, and you start a widespread panic through the industry, and you find redemptions drying up because people can't leave because they can't sell the properties fast enough to get the cash to allow people to leave.
So don't panic, don't stampede for the exit door.
Well, that's what they're hoping, at least, and potentially we should all hope that as well.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on that too. And Dan's article on commercial property funds and their liquidity is in FT Money in FT Weekend on the 1st of December. Coming up, we have good news and bad news on savings accounts and what you can spend the money that you save on at Christmas. But first, self-invested personal pensions, or SIPs. You can now use these plans to invest for your retirement in cash, shares, bonds, commercial property, your own business premises, and lots more asset classes. But do you need a full SIP, which lets you hold all of these assets, or would a simple, low-cost plan be sufficient for most people? This is a question that, John, you have been asking, and you've been talking to various people about it this week.
That's right. I mean, according to a survey by Money Management, which is one of our sibling publications, only 5% of SIP plans actually count as full SIPs because they don't own commercial property. But obviously a lot of people have other SIPs which don't and they don't necessarily include commercial property, at least direct holdings of it, not funds, as Daniel was talking about earlier. So I spoke to Neil Marsh from Hornbuckle Mitchell, who that's their full SIP provider, and he explained the differences between them.
The main difference is actually in the kind of investments that you can that are allowable within both types of schemes. And the basic execution-only type SIP will allow you to buy typically stocks and shares and may even allow you to buy pooled investments like unit trusts. But if the client is actually looking for something, a wider range of investment, that's where the kind of that kind of scheme falls short. And, for example, what a full SIP will allow is the client to invest directly in and hold commercial property. And we see within our schemes that commercial property is bought for two purposes. We're seeing clients mainly using commercial property to buy, put in their pension scheme, and then they rent it back to their own company. So in other words, when they turn up in the morning to work and draw into their car park, what they're looking at is their pension fund. And it's very tax efficient to do that because the rent that actually is received by the pension scheme, there's no tax to pay on that. So there's no income tax to pay on that. And also any capital gains. In other words, if the as the property increases in value and is sold at some point in the future, there's no capital gains tax to pay on the sale.
They offset the rent against their company profits.
Correct, John, is the final point, is that as the rent is being paid out of the company, then that is an allowable business expense and therefore reduces their corporation tax liability.
Unquoted shares are another area that full SIPs excel in.
Yes, unlisted shares are increasingly seeing quite a lot of activity in this area, and many clients are looking at, who are prepared to take a higher risk, investing in companies that are not yet quoted on any stock market. And there are issues that you have to be careful of, but where a client is not involved with the running of the business, then as long as a few simple steps are taken, like, for example, making sure that there's an independent valuation of the company, then it's possible to hold unlisted shares within a full SIP. The problem actually is not every SIP provider will allow investment in unlisted shares. So a client's got to be quite careful in terms of their selection to ensure that their chosen provider will allow that type of investment.
Full SIPs can be a bit more expensive, though. So if all you're looking for is a SIP that allows you to hold funds and shares, would that be a reason just to stick with an execution-only SIP, or are there any other issues?
Well, I think the other issue to look out for is what actually happens when the client gets to retirement. The problem with these cheaper SIPs is that they're only designed as a vehicle to invest stocks and shares. For a client who actually then wants to go into either income drawdown or alternatively secured pension, most of these types of schemes don't offer that option. So it means transferring out of an execution-only type scheme into a full SIP. So I think when clients are deciding on whether a execution-only type scheme or a full SIP is appropriate, I think they've got to look at the timescale involved and the size of fund that they're likely to have when they get to retirement.
John, Neil makes a good point there about the size of your fund affecting things like your ability to do income drawdown. Of course, that's also a factor when trying to assess the fees and charges associated with SIPs. If you've got a large fund and you're paying for a full SIP, a fixed fee, that can be quite cost effective.
That's right. I mean, you can obviously put up to about $225,000 a year into a SIP. So if the setup fee is $500 against $225,000, that's very little. And it might be much better than a percentage-based SIP. On the other hand, if it's a small contribution, then £500 could make a big difference. I mean, there is increasing competition in the market. And Hazel Carr, for instance, have just brought out a new SIP, which has no setup fee. There are also quite a lot of cheap, low-cost SIPs if you all you want to do is hold shares and things.
Yeah, I heard about one this week from Best Invest, which is, I think it's a very simple one, and it's just holding funds, basically. But incredibly low cost, I think free, I think, for many things.
It's free if you've got over 50,000 to invest, and you get free advice as well, which a lot of the execution-only ones, as the name suggests, that there's no advice. But this is the best of both worlds, in a way.
The best of both worlds, if you're looking for a simple SIP with relatively low fund value.
That's right. I mean, obviously, the full SIPs do allow you to hold more things, such as we've talked about property, unquoted shares, and physical gold, which you can't hold in an execution-only SIP.
Yeah, which is a good point if you're looking to diversify over the long term for your retirement pot.
Bars are wafers, but no coins.
Good. Well, thank you very much for looking into the ins and outs of all of that, John, and we'll be looking at SIPs and pension planning in the weeks ahead as well. And finally today, it's good news, bad news. And sadly, we don't have Steve Lodge, our cashback expert, with us this week. But we do have some good news and a little bit of bad news. The good news is actually about savings accounts. And Steve, in fact, identified the fact that West Bromwich Building Society has an account called Premier Bonus Tracker 4, and it pays a variable rate of 6.6% on balances of £1,000. And upwards, guaranteed to track the Bank of England base rate plus 0.85% until May of next year, and then the base rate plus 0.6% until November next year. So, according to Steve Sums, he's good at this sort of stuff, if base rates stay at 5.75%, you'll get 6.6% guaranteed until June, and then 6.35% until next November. For instant access, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that does sound good, Matthew. But as Steve said, that's if rates stay at 5.75%. A lot of commentators are thinking they might start to come down January or February. So if that does happen, then this rate might not look quite so attractive by the beginning of next year.
I suppose that's when the fact that it's instant access and you can get out quickly
that's true.
Might help you out. But I suppose that's a good point. You might only get a few months' worth of interest at that rate. I suppose there are higher paying fixed rate bonds as well out there at the moment. I think Stroud and Swindon are paying 6.85% fixed until June, Standard Life 6.8% until June. So I suppose if you think rates are going to fall, you may be better off in one of these.
Yeah, I mean, if you can afford the money and to lock it up for 6 months or so, that's probably worth doing.
Certainly. Now, my favourite bit of good news this week, which I heard only recently, is what you can do with your savings interest, or how you could spend it just before Christmas, right, if you earn enough. Asda, the supermarket chain, is selling vintage Dom Perignon champagne for £30 a bottle. And this is the I know, it's absolutely amazing. This is the stuff that, if you were to buy it at the Ritz, would cost you £230.
Amazing.
It is. I don't know how they're doing it. But of course, Asda do specialise in low-cost champagne deals.
And, yeah. Do you know whether you can get this online, or is there going to be a mad rush of crowds at every Asda around the country?
I expect there will be a mad rush. What Asda have said is it's only available at certain stores.
Right.
And there's a telephone number that, if you go onto the Asda website, you can phone the number and find out which stores it's at. But I would imagine this gets snapped up quite quickly.
I would imagine. Yeah. Do you know when it's starting?
Starting as of now.
Right.
Available now. So if you want to stock up for Christmas, and we'll get the sort of almost the best there is for the price of a standard one, that's quite good. Asda, of course, but well known for their low cost champagne deals. A good deal there. The only bad news to this is it's not the 1990 vintage, which apparently is the best in recent memory.
Well, maybe that will be next year's special.
Well, yes, exactly. We'll look out for that. Come on, Asda. Give us the 1990 vintage at £30 a bottle and make a profit. Don't know how they do it. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week's FT Money Show. Do remember that you can email your views and your questions to ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. And we'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from the team.
Goodbye.
Bye. It's goodbye from our podcast producers, Blue Barracuda.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.